On behalf of the Innovation Institute for Fan Experience, I would like to welcome our attendees and our panelists, especially our moderator, Cassie Hansen from Intel Corporation. She serves as Global Director of Video Security and Venues. She organized and planned this fantastic town hall. This town hall, Women in Sports and Entertainment Security, Taking Charge and Making a Difference, is the first of a series of town halls featuring women in sports and entertainment security. I am Lou Marciani, Director of the Innovation Institute for Fan Experience. You will hear from an impressive group of women who are leading the way in sports security for the next generation of women. Our distinguished panel will talk about their firsthand personal experiences in the industry, also discuss the pressing security challenges that women leaders are addressing today, and the future view of sports and entertainment security, including the importance of diversity and inclusion, with an emphasis on helping the next generation of young women who may be interested in becoming security professionals and future leaders. So at this time, I'd like to turn it over to our moderator, Cassie Hansen. Cassie, it's all yours.
Okay, great. Thanks, Lou. And hello, wherever in the world you are and whatever time it is. Want to thank you all for joining us at this town hall, our first Women in Sports and Entertainment Security. I'm really honored to moderate. I mean, the women on this panel are just amazing and have amazing backgrounds. So as Lou said, you know, we'll gain some really valuable insights from all of these amazing women, their careers, the impact they're making on the industry, their perceptions of the role of security in sports and entertainment, and the future for women in sports as well. So I hope this will be the best event you attend this month online. I know we all do a lot of events online. So I think this is going to be the best one yet. So I'm setting the bar really high. So let's buckle up and get started. And first, I'd like to start off with a round of introductions. And I'd love for each panelist to introduce themselves, their background, and also one thing they're most excited about in the world of sports and entertainment security. And, you know, what do they feel really positive about the future about? So I'd love to hear your perceptions of where we are today. So I'll go ahead and start around the horn with Muriel Howell. Hi, Muriel.
Hi, Cassia. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. Great to see you. And thank you so much for allowing me to be a part of such a esteemed group of women when it comes to this event. You know, my background, my journey to becoming a private security consultant, I like to say it's pretty interesting. I think so. You know, after retiring from 20 years with the United States Air Force, retiring honorably, I should say, I started off in the arena security event as an event security. And learning the various security protocols led to a position of executive protection with WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment. And I might say that I am truly indebted to them because I was their first female that they brought on their executive protection team. It also led me to working with Crowd Management Group Incorporated. And with that organization, I worked with the Miss America organization, so another phenomenal organization. And ultimately, I had the distinct honor of being a member of the travel team security with one of the NBA franchise teams, the Charlotte Hornets. So I'm really honored and proud of my background and the multiple years that I've spent in this industry. And as you asked about what I find exciting, I think I'm most excited about the fact that the growing numbers of women that are entering the roles, I mean, various roles within our industry. I think that's really got me pumped up and excited to share and to hear all of the experiences of the other ladies on this panel.
Wonderful. Well, yeah, you certainly have an amazing background. I really enjoyed my conversation with Muriel about WWE and, you know, all of that. And then, of course, Miss America, such a great program. So with that said, I'll go ahead around the horn to Adrienne and have Adrienne do her introduction.
Thank you. And thank you all for having me today. Very exciting to be on this panel with such amazing female security leaders. My name is Adrienne Nguyen, and I'm the Senior Director of Security for the Golden State Warriors and Chase Center. I, along with our head of security, Brian Herbert, oversee our 24/7 security team, event security team, canine, medical, and police. I was hired a year before Chase Center opened as the event services director, where I primarily focused on guest services and security, staffing, and budgeting. A few months in, we saw there was a real need for someone to take on a lead role in establishing security measures for the building. So I transferred fully into the security department, and I've been here ever since. That was 4.5 years ago. And so quite a lot happened in that time. We opened the building. We closed the building 7 months into opening due to COVID. We reopened to fans, no fans, then partial fans, and ended our first full season as the 2022 NBA champions. So yeah, very, very exciting. Finally got that ring after 16 years. So very cool. So I am, though, a Jersey girl at heart, born and raised, and getting into the venue industry in 07. I was hired 30 days prior to Prudential Center opening. And I got involved on the premium services side, ended as the director of guest services. And then I crossed the river over to New York and was hired to work as in the security department at Madison Square Garden. And that's where the passion for event security really grew. And I'm just thrilled that when I look around the room, I do see more female security directors. I am one of the few, I'm proud to say I'm one of the few female MBA security directors that work at an MBA facility. And recently, a year or so ago, we have the MBA brought us a female security director, Mary Martinez. She's amazing. She oversees arena and team security. And to be able to work alongside a female in that caliber has just been an amazing experience. And I just can't wait to keep working alongside more females. So this is a great start, and we can just see it growing from here. So again, absolutely great to be here.
And we're very lucky to have you in California now, right? With the Golden State Warriors. So Eileen, let's go around to you next and have you do your intro.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Welcome to everyone on our call from, I'm in London currently, so it's tea time here and just finished a day at work, but again, very privileged to be joining my colleagues on the stage this afternoon, so thank you for the opportunity. So my background is, I entered the event space just over 20 something years ago, and I came into it through health and safety practitioner. I don't have a law enforcement background, but I've broken through that mold. And at the time, I was a single mum with 5 daughters. So, I mean, I still am a single mum with 5 daughters. The girls are still there. But it just shows you the challenges that come to you as a female, a mom, etc., within the event space as well, and what can be achieved with the right opportunities and the right environments to progress and become the best version of yourself. I've worked in multiple international tournaments, including the FIFA Soccer World Cup on 2 occasions, 2 Olympic Games, Commonwealth Games, Rugby and Cricket World Cups, etc. And I also currently work with the NFL in the stadium that I'm currently in. Those major tournaments that has been very much around looking at workforce, mass recruitment for those tournaments, the timelines, as well as had the opportunity with the training company that I have to work with the majority of the football, as in soccer stadiums in the UK, in terms of developing those safety and security leaders within those event spaces. I was awarded the MBE by the Queen in 2014 for my services to the events industry, my international services to the events industry, based on the fact that I'd been to South Africa and worked and take my company and my values, etc., to South Africa, to Rio and so on. And I'd actually done quite a bit of work with that, actually wrote international training development programs, which set around best practice in delivery of security operatives, safety practitioners and so forth. I also lead in the current club that I'm with. So I'm currently with Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. I went there 4 or 5 years ago to mobilise a brand new stadium. So that was quite an exciting opportunity to look at how we grow a new team from scratch. And so we currently now have, I manage and oversee on event days almost 4,000 staff, casual work staff, which includes about 1,500 security and safety professionals and operatives in there. And within that, I lead on equality, diversity and inclusion, looking at some of our long-term goals around how we make our venue more inclusive to guests, to workforce, etc. Yeah, so also, what else I've got to tell you? I think that's about it for now. So I've got lots more to share with you as we go through this session, but thank you for having me.
Yes, and such an amazing background, all of you. You know, we have some amazing women here. And one of the things that I started noticing as I've been working with the Security Industry Association and Women in Security Forum, as well as IFX, was there's a lot of great women in the security industry as a whole. And then there's also wonderful women in the sports and entertainment security industry. And so I really was eager to hear from each of you, and so glad that you're spending the time with us, because I think the audience needs to hear this, especially any young females that are looking to join security roles and in sports too. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I want to go a little deeper into some of the you know, elements of having a diverse security staff and the role that women play in there. And, you know, some examples, you know, obviously we do some talks before we get online here to generate ideas around the discussion, because we want to make sure it's very insightful for all. So one of the things we talked about was emotional intelligence as a strength, women handling de-escalations differently, empathy, you know, the role supporting young players and bringing new talent into the industry. And then, of course, the fan base is very diverse, right? So I want to start off with Muriel. We're going to, you know, open it up each question. The format will be very discussion oriented. So I'd like all the panelists to, you know, feel free to jump in with their commentary as well and valuable feedback. But I want to start with Muriel, because in our conversation, we talked about the NBA, for example, and some of the younger players, and, you know, they're away from their parents, you know, sometimes for the first time in their lives. And, you know, what the role of a woman can play in security in, you know, being a role model there, but also the de-escalations we talked about, Muriel, right? Being having to deal with the fan behavior, and what kind of role do women play there? So I'd love to get your perspective there.
No, I appreciate that. And I think it's really important. There is no right or wrong. We're looking for effective and ineffective. Mm-hmm. So it's not to say that our male counterparts can't do this just as well as we do. But I think that as a woman, our tendencies are, and when you think about some of the male perpetrators or intruders, they tend to see, look at us women as maybe mom or sister. I'm not old enough for them to look at me like a grandmom yet. So mom and sister, I'll definitely take that look. But I think the level of respect, the tone changes. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, when a male is confronted by another male, there is just that tension that just tends to build because both want to be the alpha male. But when a woman steps in, you know, we can soften the tone. I found that in my experience, and I'm not saying that's always the case, because if I need to be aggressive, then I can be, you know, let's not get that confused either. I think that to be able to de-escalate a situation through your words, because oftentimes you have to think about the image of your client, whether it's the individual or the organization, because the last thing that they want is any type of negative press. So being able to relate, to talk to the fan or whomever the situation is, to get them to understand that there's a better way to resolve this situation instead of it being brutal force all the time, works out across the board for everybody. So it's a win-win across the board. The fan gets to enjoy the experience, your client, the organization is happy because there's nothing negative going on. And then, you know, you don't have to exert too much energy. So you have to be clever. You have to be witty in how you handle different situations. And I'll give you a prime example of what I mean. during my time with one of the organizations that I shared, we were on a ferry. We were on a ferry. And one of my male principals was being harassed by a couple of other females. Now, as you can imagine, on the ferry, it's enclosed quarters. So you really can't go anywhere. And I started thinking about how can I de-escalate the situation without it turning into a brawl? So I walked over to my male client and it's funny, but I said, honey, I'm so sorry. Did you want water or did you want a soda? And so the young lady was like, oh my goodness, I'm sorry. Is this your boyfriend or your husband? I didn't mean any disrespect. And I says, I really appreciate, you know, you stepping back and giving him some space. So I looked at my client and I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I did not mean to portray myself as your girlfriend, but I had to think about, had I come to her as security, what would have been her response? Yeah. Would she have met me aggressively? I'm on a ferry, can't go anywhere. So it was a situation that it wound up being the best situation for that instance because my client was happy. He was not harassed by those women. Those women went and told other women, don't mess with his wife because she's not one to play with. So it really worked out. So when you start talking about de-escalation and win-win across the board, being witty and how you handle it. And then the other question you asked me about with the NBA players, what I found is sometimes the young gentlemen may have situations going on in their life that they don't necessarily want to talk about with their male counterparts, with their boys, if you will, with their players, because their image is there. So they have found solace in being able to talk to me openly and honestly about what it is that they're going through. And I can give them the female perspective. I can talk to them and we can kind of look through the right way, the wrong way, the suggested way, the unsuggested, what your actions are going to, the consequences, I should say, that are going to come from your actions that a woman's perspective can offer. Now, keeping in mind that I know that I'm secure and I'm only going to give them the guidance, but gaining their trust and their ability to talk to me now allows me to help them. And if I need to involve the organization to help escalate and to help resolve that situation, that's so much better than this particular individual holding it all in and it turns into a bigger problem later on down the line. So I just think that with the questions that you asked, I think those are two definitely, I guess, really, really perspective and honest ways of how de-escalation from a woman steps forward and then how we can use our multiple hats that we wear in order to help our clients to be able to resolve issues as a woman.
That's amazing. I mean, I do think, you know, young people absolutely need that. And you're right, you don't want it turning into a big thing either. And then the fan base too, right? So Adrian, did you have any thoughts on, you know, we talked about leadership and emotional intelligence and, you know, from your perspective there?
Yeah, I mean, I think a big challenge stepping into the whole venue security side for me originally was, you know, everyone thinks physical security. And so de-escalation, like Muriel said, that's key. There's verbal de-escalation and then there's physical. And we're seeing, especially in 2023, we heavily rely on police. And so the key is here, all right, if verbal doesn't work, then we're going to go into physical. And you know, we know as security leaders, there's strength in numbers. And so you have that response team that's trained for physical security, but you also have police. And so I think number one is always the relationship building amongst your team as a female, making sure that's set. And then when you're going to deal with fan behavior, when you're going to deal with issues, you know, using those tactics amongst your team. I feel that the relationship side is huge because we rely on, you know, we rely on tour security for shows. We work very closely with tour security. Tour security is executive protection for the artist. We're handling the guest side. And then NBA, we're working with team security. We're working with NBA security. And all of us have to blend together and then work with each other on these tactics. And I feel, emotional intelligence, et cetera, all of that helps. But I think it's just breaking the misconception of physical security.
Yep. I think that's such a great point. And I'm actually going to segue this a little bit because I'd love to hear from Eileen, given she's involved in Premier Soccer. And, you know, we've heard about the fan base there, right? Very, very passionate, fan base. So this is kind of a two-part question because I'd love to hear your perspective on what they said. But then also we talked about educating the teams and the fans and the venues and the importance of how you approach the fans with how they're behaving, right? And as that evolves post-pandemic, we saw a lot of different behaviors. You know, we've all seen it on the news, whether it's in the NFL or NBA. And, you know, really, what steps, Eileen, do you feel, you know, will help in terms of educating that fan base? And I think you guys are taking some steps to do that as well.
Yeah. So one of the, if I may choose one area of which has escalated post-pandemic is really around hate crime, use of racist language, homophobic and sexist language from our fan base. And some of the education has to start with, one, the club's ethics, so how we position ourselves and what our tolerance levels are within that. And clearly we have really robust processes to deal with any of that type of behaviour. So not necessarily physical in the first instance, but it might be verbal. Often when people are challenged about their language, then that's when it escalates into a physical thing. So again, it's all about there's a consequence to behaviour. So if you're going to speak like that, one, we have laws that protect us here that we can actually deal with things. But again, going back to education of our supporters, then it is our website, you know, we have a banning and sanctions policy there. We have regular communication with them. So if they've bought a ticket, they get an email to say, you know, these behaviours are not acceptable. 2 weeks ago, we played Chelsea. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge rivalry between the two clubs, being London clubs and in the Premier League. And there's often been a homophobic connotation to the Chelsea supporters. And so we did a lot of work, a lot of engagement with our home supporters. Now, bearing in mind, we're talking there'll be 3,000 Chelsea fans and there'll be 59,000 Tottenham Hotspur fans. So to educate everybody to say, you know, if you use this language and it's evidenced, then we will take the strongest action, which will give you a criminal record, so on and so forth. And on that day, we had two individuals who chanted some homophobic language towards the Chelsea supporters. Both were arrested, both will go to court and so forth. So there's an element of what's the culture of your club or your work environment, and then how will you follow that through to the last supporter who comes through? We're also starting to see, interestingly, a number of additional female match officials. So you've got more referees who are female coming into many sports. So that, again, is looking at sexist language towards, you know, you should be at home in the kitchen, what you're doing, running the line, what you're doing. So, again, those are the education pieces where we're looking at equality, inclusion, diversity around the team, the players and the match officials. And thirdly, online abuse, that which has really become heightened around some of the language that's used and directed towards players and, again, match officials. So, again, we've put some new legislation in for soccer that allows us to track down the keyboard warriors. And whilst it's not necessarily around a female role within it, but those are the types of behaviour. So keyboard warriors, sexist comments coming through, and then general racist and hate crime that comes through. Each club is tasked with, you know, understanding its own values, what you're going to do about it, robust investigation, following through to criminal investigation. Again, we have some other legislation that supports us in stopping people actually going to football games completely, where England would be playing anybody who was through the criminal system from football actually has to hand their passport in if England are playing abroad. So they're not allowed to leave the country. So we track people down. So that's one piece of thing, but that's a government level. Then we then start to look at how we're educating our stewards and our security operatives who are faced with this language and this particular style of behaviour. And again, that is just thorough training, making sure they fully understand the impact of the language towards the victim, the importance of getting a statement from the victim, importance of getting some witness statements. So we work tremendously hard, and we have some toolbox training evenings where we say, jump on the call for half an hour, we'll talk you through. Our investigation officer will, you know, support them in writing incidents and making sure they fully understand, and will support them should they need to attend a court for hearing as well, so we give that support. And quite often what we're seeing is our workforce are kind of going, I've only come here for the money, now you want me to write something down and make me accountable, and actually I don't want to go to court, and so therefore I'm just not going to do it. So developing people's confidence, because if we don't deal with this type of discriminatory behavior, then it's coming back next week, because when you have a regular team and club, these individuals are coming each week. So we've observed and detailed the impact onto our customers, all the supporters have come, but then following on for that, there's also an impact to our staff. So we have a duty of care to our staff. So we, you know, it's important that we recognize, again, if they've dealt with an incident of that nature, that we are giving them some debrief, checking in on their welfare during the week and so forth, that people are not adversely affected and they feel confident to come back to work in the future. So those are three areas that we're really focusing on at the moment. So again, the language, as I say, doesn't necessarily, it's obviously not physical, but it could escalate once somebody is challenged, because everybody feels that they have a right to say what they want to say, but unaware that they have an impact on another individual or group of individuals by the nature of their language.
Well, I think the consequences too, that the fans know what the consequences are when they're even before they're getting to the venue, and the ability to reinforce that through your staff and your workforce, so they know that, like you said, the culture from the top is that, hey, there's a zero tolerance to any of that type of behavior, you know. And I that's to be commended, you know, because I know you guys deal with a lot of large, passionate groups. So, you know, I went to a Real Madrid game and I was shocked at how many people were there. But the one thing I noticed, the best practice was there was no alcohol in the stadium. So,
we sell alcohol, but they're not allowed to drink it in view of the pitch.
Oh.
So they can drink on the concourses, football, but they cannot drink in view. So that's, again, a quirky piece of legislation. I mean, we have rugby next week and they can drink in view of the pitch. We will have NFL in October. And again, they'll be able to eat and drink in view of the pitch. So it's just a football thing.
Yeah.
All of those driven to try and manage manage behaviours, and those are, again, coming through some disasters that we had back in 1980 and 1985-89, believing that fan behaviour was driven by alcohol. Of course, people had a lot of alcohol and came to events and then became very unruly in hooliganism. Where we're at now, I mean, obviously there's a different influence through drug taking, and you know, it's hard to quantify who is taking drugs and who's not taking drugs. Obviously it's an illegal activation, but you know, we know that it's going on out there, which again is taking the some of the behaviours to a different level, because we're not quite sure how people behave when they take drugs. We kind of know what we're going to get if we have a drunk person. They're going to cry, they're going to fight, they're going to laugh, they're going to sleep. But you kind of know what to expect because we've all dealt with that in our security world.
Or when they hand the one guy a donut, right? Or a scone or something sweet, right?
So that's just another influence to be considered as well.
I think it's, as we talk about the fan experience and behavior, one of the things that we, you know, we talk about within IFX, and of course at Intel, and my role is technology, and what is the role of technology as we begin this kind of new era of fan experiences, right? We know there's, you know, the pandemic, it was a bit of a challenge. And then getting back in, to your point, Adrian, you know, you open, you close, you have certain requirements that you need to meet, and all of them were different. But now we're starting to get some consistency. And of course, you know, all the leagues and teams and everybody want to have their fans have a great experience, right? And but do you see technology playing a role for you here? And what are some of your views on that and how it's helping? And I'll start with Muriel first, and then go, you know, we can go around to Adrian and talk about that and how the technology, and then end up with Eileen, is, you know, how's that technology really helping you guys?
You know, I think technology has definitely been a second set of eyes, because we can't be everywhere, you know, all the time. Of course, going into the various arenas, and even with working with you know, the Miss America organization, the venue period is not necessarily always going to be arena. You know, we're at the mercy of the technology that's within that venue. So I think it definitely enhances. It gives us intel that we may not have necessarily been able to gather on our own, whether it's prior to the event taking place. So I think that technology has definitely been important. You know, from my perspective, being more so on the EP side, like Eileen was saying, I'm really relying on what happens in the arena. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I take the knowledge that the arena gives me in order to help me better protect my client in making better decisions, whether it's, you know, for egress or ingress or just different movements throughout their venue. So it definitely helps on the EP side, really relying heavily on the arenas to help us make this happen.
Okay. Adrian, speaking of arenas.
Yeah, I mean, the game changer has always been cameras. The more cameras, the better. Cameras don't lie. And for us, Brian, our head of security, introduced a surveillance team, which has just changed the game. We were always relying on our cameras, obviously, but for us, it's the, you know, eyes that we really need. We're in, you know, an instant, you get a call on the radio, physical altercation and section 223. By the time we get up there, you have a surveillance analyst calling you, giving you all the information. And so one manager now has all the info. It helps the fan experience because, okay, we can take this group out of the seating area and we have evidence that this group has been disrupting other guests in the seating area and we can remove them very quickly. Whereas prior, you're investigating this on the concourse. It's taking a couple, you know, it's taking time. You're going into the seating area. You have, you know, witness statements. You're still getting your witness statements, but now you have concrete evidence that you got to get this person out. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, you're getting another call from a surveillance analyst saying, the security officer in your lobby, the door's not properly shut, or they're handling an issue that we need management at. And so we're just seeing how quickly in real time we're getting this information, and it's just been incredible. And so, you know, for us, it's always cameras. And then if you could actually have that dedicated team versus, yes, in your command center, you're always monitoring cameras. But if you have, you know, a few people that are just solely tracking and assisting, it just changes the game.
Yeah. I think video analytics have come a long way as well for cameras and the ability to run advanced analytics. And to your point, you said real time, right? You can't wait for that information. You need it now. And I think there was a question in here and I'll hand it to Eileen, is, you know, what are some of the technology uses? So I mentioned video analytics, Adrian mentioned cameras, but I also think some of the futuristic ones are like robots. Right. We know that workforce is a challenge, right? Getting people to show up at events that to come to work and whether it's in security or in other groups, but you know, being able to manage that crowd, right, and understand the crowd movement and control and, you know, where you need to have people positioned throughout the venue and being able to have that pretty instantly, right? And also where there's trouble, right? I was at a very, very large stadium last year, and they had some fans go through a fence that was really only meant for handicapped people. And the fans ended up just kind of pushing the fence down. And at that point, they could have used security right there to kind of stop them. And but there wasn't any eyes there for them or any people there. So that's a security alert that's going to go to security. They're going to come over, close the fence, make sure the fans don't go. They go through the right area, right? But it's things like that that I see more and more talking to venues using those advanced analytics that detect and alert quickly, right? And also the contextual analysis of it as well. So Eileen, are you guys seeing that as well from a technology perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think we go a stage back. So whilst we're in the moment talking about the operation live event, we're actually using a lot of our data insight to actually look at the demand and trends of spend, queue systems to food and beverage concessions. So we've only been opened, we only opened in April 19, the new stadium. And in that time, we've been able to look at some of the costs associated with the workforce. So, for example, we know our hourly rates for a particular, for me to bring my stewarding workforce in, it's about £15,000 an hour to bring the workforce in just for stewarding and security. But by using the insight of data, we were able to say, well, when we first opened, we opened at 3 hours out before the kick. And then we now only open 2 hours in advance because the spend per head was very low comparative to what we were spending to mobilize our workforce. And therefore, everything around the guest experience comes from the data around food and beverage. So we know we have very good technology around, we have the capability to pour about 10,000 pints a minute in our stadium, should we wish to. So some of our stations are a 6-second pour to a pint of beer. So our service is very slick, and therefore we don't have many queues. Now, when we first opened, because people are very glad to be there, that was the home of their soccer team, the demand on food and beverage, I can't tell you, it's exponential. So understanding the queues, we know that some concessions don't sell hardly any food, because that's just how people have now naturally fallen into, I always go and get my beer there. So we've been able to readjust the queue lanes. We've been able to, so that actually reduced conflict on the concourse, reduced the time, because we only have a 15-minute half time. And that's the time that you have to rush out, buy that beer, drink it on the concourse and get back out again, because you can't take it with you, as an example. So by understanding what was coming to each of the 52 concessions that we have, which is huge, and we were able to deconflict a lot of the frustrations that people have. They now can come have their and enjoy that as part of the fan experience, which again is one of the bigger things that obviously Lou and the team at IIFX are looking at. So that was really good. We also look at what have we got? Digital ticketing. So all our tickets are now on the phone. So if you purchase, everything's there. So again, a lot of critical data coming to us via technology. We're able to drill into our turnstiles. We know, again, using the previous history of the past 2 years, we know that people are not coming early to do certain things. So again, we've been able to adjust, and that reduces the cost overall and potentially give a better customer experience. We also have, in some of our spaces, we have headcount capacity cameras. So again, if we're looking at migration, people moving around, the new stadium is very free flow, so you can go anywhere you want, basically. So it's not like go through one bank of turnstiles and that's the only space you can go. So we're always worrying about what happens if we do get migration. So we've now got headcount cameras, which tell us live data in the control room, how many people have gone in and out of a space. So we have live data coming through. So our pre-planning and where we're at now is all based on that data insight gathering from technology. Then in match, we have obviously our CCTV and we have this headcount. And then looking forward to the stadium of 2030, which is kind of my agenda now. What's our workforce going to look like? Never mind whether we have any workforce, because as young people, and we actually looked at redressing how we engage with people to come to workforce, because we know that the majority of young people are using TikTok and other things. I mean, we're probably the last generation of email users. And therefore, you know, last month we were still communicating, was email was our main way of communicating. Now we've moved to WhatsApp. We're getting a higher attendance rate because that WhatsApp text message is going out and nobody ignores it because people don't really look at emails. So understanding how our next generation, so if we look at what 12-year-olds are doing at the moment, they in 7 years, 2030, are going to be there at 19, ready for work. So we've got to adjust and change our methodology for recruitment and how we manage our workforce to welcome those people into our workforce. So, yeah, so people are very much exposed to different things. And it's only 7 years to 2030. So wow.
That's amazing. I mean, I still print out paper, by the way. So I'm far off from like TikTok, and I still send emails to people. And they're like, can you just get on IM? I think that's a great segue, Eileen, because we talk about what does the future workplace look like, and especially in security, and what does that advancement for women in sports and entertainment security look like? And obviously, you guys all have amazing backgrounds and different experiences and obviously different perspectives from your experience, right? And we know that women can bring that in the security realm. And we talked about de-escalation and emotional intelligence. But we also, one of the things that came out of our conversation was, you know, we really need to start blowing up the bias about the roles that women should play. Right. And, you know, how do we show the next generation that security is a great place to be, that those bias and changing those biases and creating pathways and advancement for women to get into security? And so I recall a conversation with Adrienne. We were talking about Madison Square Garden and, you know, the leadership opportunities she had, but all the different roles. So I'd love to hear from each of you. You know, what is your view on what we need to do to help women advance in security and get into security? And what are the roles that can be played in security that really blow up that bias? So I'm gonna throw it up to Muriel.
To attract more young ladies to join into the security force, they need to understand that it's not all about muscles. Mm-hmm. You know, as Adrienne talked about earlier, there's always the connotation, the thought process that anything with security deals with physicality. So we need women to understand that, yes, you do need to be able to protect yourself, to protect your client. So you do want to acquire the necessary training that's required to have hands-on tactics. But also you want to understand that you can bring yourself to this equation. It doesn't always mean that security is broad. It doesn't necessarily always mean executive protection. It can be, you know, working in an office, overseeing in a venue, overseeing the security operations. It can be working on the technology side of security. So I think women need to think out the box. We need to think about the qualifications that we have, those that we want to acquire, and to see how they fit within the security realm. I also think we shouldn't place any limitations on ourselves. You know, it's often thought that, and I know I hear it all the time, oh, you must be single because you're in security, you travel all the time. Well, why couldn't a woman that has a family do the exact same thing that I do? And of course, they're all personal decisions, but I think that we should not place limitations on ourselves. There shouldn't be a status, if you will, that says only a woman can do this. Only a woman can do that. There are so many aspects to the security industry that I think all women should learn to. And that comes back on us to be able to advertise, to broadcast, to showcase that it's more than just physical security or physical aspects of doing the job that is what's entailed in security. So I don't know, Adrienne or Eileen, what do y'all think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I've very well said. I think, you know, when I was at Madison Square Garden, how am I going to get into security? I have no I don't have a law enforcement background, military background. How can I get into this world? And it's opportunities. And, you know, on the leadership side, in the beginning of my career, there was a lot of turnover. That's very common on the venue side. And so now you're security and guest services manager, and you don't have a boss, and we have 5 shows this week, who's advancing with the tour security director? Who's meeting with the NHL security director, NBA? And now you're in the hot seat, and the work will always prove itself. And so I've never looked at myself as the only female in the room, which that's a common thing as well. It was up until this year that I have never advanced a show with a female security director. And that happened multiple times this year, which was incredible. And so it's just master the job, master the venue you work in. Know each department, develop the relationships and let the work speak for itself. So then when opportunities come where, okay, I think we need a director, I really think this person, they should get the job. And so that's the position you want to get yourself in. And I think just, you know, in the interview process, giving opportunities to females, we're, you know, Chase Center and the Golden State Warriors, you know, we're proud to say that our lieutenant who heads up all of our PD is female. Our medical supervisor who heads up our entire medical team, each event is female. Our contract security team is led by three females. Our security manager, we have a female on our team. We have a female security supervisor, female security officers. You know, that's important to us because they do bring, you know, a different level to the department. And so we pride ourselves on that. But you have to continue to do that and give opportunities to those that, you know, okay, they might not have X, Y, and Z, but they do have this. And so also, you know, I never knew about the touring industry. I didn't know, okay, sports and entertainment, you can join a league. NFL, NHL, NBA, they have their security departments. Mm-hmm. Promoter side, Live Nation, AEG, et cetera, they have security departments, corporate security, executive protection. I mean, a lot of people get locked, especially people graduating sports and entertainment, they don't really realize how many different fields and departments are they're available to them. And so just the education on that alone, I think would help with broadening opportunities.
I love that because, you know, oftentimes, you know, when there's a job, women, I don't have the data point handy of where it came from, but women will not apply for a job because they don't meet every single requirement, right? And where a male will apply for it regardless of if he has even one qualification. So to your point, you know, giving women opportunities and encouraging women and mentoring and having male allies as well, right? I mean, every single one of you has male allies that gave me your names, right? And they were like, you've got to talk to this person, right? And it, you know, it was true, right? You have such amazing background. So Eileen, do you have any thoughts on that? Because you blew up the bias. I mean, you've got five kids, single mom, and you're just killing it in your career. So, you know, you already blew up the bias.
Yeah, and all my kids are female, so I've got five daughters.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. I've kind of written down a few notes based on my colleagues here. You know, creating a career progression route. So are people seeing what you're actually recruiting for? Because I think if you haven't come through a law enforcement background, it's hard to get into these roles. So when the recruitment goes out, you know, if you're able to, when we've just done a recruitment actually yesterday, and part of that is we've got a map that says, what's the potential of running the stadium? Because I started where you were, and now I've been globally doing my job, but I started as a steward almost 25 years ago. And here I am because somebody's created opportunities, or I've taken opportunities and figured out later. So creating a career progression, what are the routes? So give your new staff that knowledge, as we're saying. Mm-hmm. Also around the female, I mean, again, back to my data, we hold a lot of data, but so all of the people who work for us, we have data insight into workforce. So at the moment for my safety and security team of 1,500, I know 70% are male and 30% are female. But I also know that of the 30% female, 50% of those are in the top supervision roles. So looking back to how we progress people and give opportunities, there's still quite a bit of work to do. But and knowing that data allows us to consider some direct discrimination in recruitment. So we might now look to next season, start to recruit in certain areas where only females go to study, for example, just to widen the pool of people. We're always, of course, looking for the best person for the job. And don't forget, 51% of the world's population is female. You know, so creating opportunities, understanding your data, looking at the numbers. I mean, will I move between 70 and 30 in the next 12 months? Probably not, because, again, there's a lot of other insight data out there, and our census has just been launched as well, as in a new report on the census of the UK. Again, back to the 2030 thing, we're hearing a lot more of young people who present as non-binary and trans and so forth. There's a lot of that inclusion going on in the UK, and driving to, so we should have unisex toilets, so making your environment more welcoming for that inclusive work population that's going to come in the next 7 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, young people or any person that's presenting as in a different as themselves, you know, they need to see some reflection of themselves or some inclusivity to make it a welcome work environment. looking at that wide range of roles and how many people can get into those CCTV operatives. We've got control room managers. We've got all sorts of things that people need to understand that those opportunities are available to them. So I think looking at becoming an employer of choice. So in the capital, you can imagine we're competing for workforce, which is against another 25 venues, which of which four are Premier League football clubs. What makes us different? What makes us encourage people to come and work with it, whether they're male or female? So we have female sanitary products in every toilet, so they're all free for any female that comes to work or any guest that comes to the stadium. All of those products are free. We're working towards being a champion around menopause, encouraging, there's a new award in the UK, be menopause friendly, which West Ham, our competitors, have got that award. So we're like, damn it, no, we need to have that.
So I think gotta love the UK, gotta love it.
The spectrum of looking at women in the work environment is really, really, I suppose, getting a new spotlight. And yeah. And the opportunities are there. And morally, people, I think, are questioning, I've got no males in my recruitment of interview panels or whatever. I think morally, people are really starting to really check themselves, and the law does support protecting females in the workplace and so on. So, look, understand your data, again, back to what you've currently got. How can you change the wider pool of applicants into your workforce? And then when you get them, talk to them about all the opportunities that are available to them through the industry. I mean, I've also toured with the Olympic Games, Commonwealth Games. The Olympic Games has 126 different departments within the Olympic Games, not all security and safety, but it's a really wide event industry pool. And you've got the Commonwealth, the Olympic Games coming to you in 2028, I think. So all of those will, again, bring new legislation potentially or new recruitment methodology that supports an organisation and their values around equality, inclusion and diversity. So there may be some good lessons to learn if you're tracking things like that. So you've also got the Soccer World Cup coming in 2026, Olympics 2028, and you've got the Rugby World Cup, male and female, coming in 31 and 33 respectively. So. And there's lots to be looking at, and there's open source to consider.
There was a question about for you specifically, Eileen, around the use of advanced analytics in the venue. Are you guys using advanced analytics in terms of identifying, trouble spots and things like that? That was a question that came when you were talking before.
So we don't use facial recognition at this minute in time. We have some laws around GDPR and sharing data and so forth. So that at this minute in time, it hasn't been deemed necessary, but we have looked at it. In terms of other critical data, the majority of it is, I mean, it's quite crude that we're using, somebody's complained about a certain section. And so we do have some monitoring going on, but most of that is back to CCTV because somebody's told us they're having poor experience. And again, very fortunately, given the fact that we're a new stadium with that volume of people, if I looked at, we've just had a game on Saturday and we had three complaints and we didn't throw anybody out. We had one arrest outside of the game for hate crime. So actually you're bringing a population of that number of people, which for us is a small town in England, and you don't, but that was all because we won. Okay. Yeah. And that's Wednesday when we got beat by AC Milan, and we had 109 people kicked out because they were in the wrong areas. So it's not an exact science, but I think the technology within the stadium, we have 2,000 screens where we can give information. On last Wednesday, our train system went down, so we had to share information with people at hotspot. That became a hotspot post-event, but for a few females who were down there, actually, we could have lost one of our train stations, as in losing it being overwhelmed and overpowered by customers just being really frustrated because we've been dumped out of a competition. Play wasn't particularly good, and they were really disgruntled before they left. And then we said, oh, by the way, the trains aren't working very well. So don't be too upset with us.
So, well, I love hearing the perspective from outside the US too, right? Because, obviously Adrian and Muriel and I are in the US, and it's great to hear what you guys are doing and the forward thinking around inclusion as well. And not only the fan, but the workforce. And then what are you doing for women, right? There was a question online that I want to throw out, which was, how do you get past the bias of a recruiter? So if you're talking to a recruiter, any tips from any of the panelists around how do you get past that recruiter who clearly may have some bias?
For our permanent staff, we do blind recruitment. So we don't know whether it's male, female, an age. We don't have that as a blind for permanent roles. So that is one thing that we would do.
Okay, great. Adrian or Muriel, any thoughts on, you know, how to stand out in front of, you know, a recruiter? And again, we talked about, you know, giving opportunities to women, but then how do women take control of their situation? And any advice you can give there about how to stand out in trying to get into an opportunity?
My motto is always put your best foot forward, because you never know who's watching. And I internalize that, and I think about my own track that I'm running on, basically, and how I went from the arena security, from event security, and was basically, if you want to say, recruited into working with WWE. You know, for many years, and the director of security there, Mr. Jim Kelly, they came to our arena to host their shows. And, you know, this happened after like the third year. He approached me and said, you know, we've been watching you. And you just never know, because I'm thinking I'm just doing my job to the best of my ability. And I'm you know, I like to think that I want to go above and beyond, because I want to be the best. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to give it my all, 200%. And he approached me and said they had been watching me over all of the years, and that, you know, his organization was, because in fact, they do have female wrestlers. And, you know, his thought was that he was ready to bring on a female security personnel within their EP team and asked me would I interview for the position. So to your point, I think being able to display, if you have an opportunity to display your qualities, your characteristics, putting your best foot forward, always being the best, reading. I always say success leaves clues. So if you find somebody within the industry that you think is doing well, then study them. Ask questions. You know, as I've been out on the road, I've had a lot of young ladies would come up to me if I'm standing courtside and would ask me, how did you get this position? You know, what do you have to do? And I do not have a problem at all in doing a brain dump and sharing with them, because I know I'm not going to be doing this forever. So I do want to create footsteps that these young ladies can walk into, but I want to paint a realistic picture, but also a picture of hope and opportunity, that given the right training, given the right mindset, given the right temperament and the right place to be able to showcase their talents, then they too can also be recruited, if you will, or talked to or approached by a director of a particular organization to join theirs. So that is kind of like my thoughts on it, just using my personal experience of how that came on board. And then, of course, you know, again, with transitioning into that of the working with the NBA, the thought there was, well, I've traveled around the world and seen so many different venues and the way other security teams operate. And you think about our world now with sports, we have so many women sports teams who also need women security. So the opportunity is limitless, whether you're working with male clients or female clients. But because of the vast knowledge that I've learned, whether it was abroad in the UK or other venues here within the United States, that helped to lend on to my credibility, to the fact that I've learned a lot, someone that has become a go-to person when it comes to the things within security. So I like to answer that with my own track record. So I think that kind of helps kind of give the example of what you were talking about.
That is amazing. I think it's great. And it ties into, Adrian, to you saying kind of show up, right? And be, you know, let the work speak for yourself, right? Did you have any other thoughts on that?
No, Muriel, that was very well said. I was going to say, you know, reputation is key. When your name is someone mentions your name, you want someone to speak highly of you, obviously. And the only way to do that is, one, the work has to show for itself. Two, it's respect for everyone you work with, no matter what title they have. Treating your staff on the venue side, we're managing hundreds of part-time employees, and you have to be respectful. You have to mentor that team, and you have to be a leader. And yes, it's really just being a respectful person and stepping up. And I did see a lot of female leaders when working at Madison Square Garden, because we have the WNBA, and there are so many security professionals that work for the WNBA, and that was eye-opening. So I do have to mention that, because that was the first time I really saw, wait a minute, there's a lot of females working on the security side and for the league. And so, you know, I have to shout out the WNBA, because they've done such a good job representing for females. So,
I think that's great. I think, you know, how you show up and, you know, yeah, I think you, when you go through a recruiting process, for example, you know, sometimes it may not go your way, right? So that may, that rejection might be protection, right? Maybe the next best thing is next, but to show up in your genuine, true way. And I think the other piece is using your network, right? Don't hesitate to reach out to people in your network and ask them for advice or guidance, or maybe put in a good word for you. And, you know, the world is, you know, while it's big, seems to be getting smaller and smaller, right? Because, you know, if you looked on LinkedIn, for example, and have a profile, there's lots of different connections, right? You may see like, oh, wow, I have 5 joint connections with Adrian, for example, right? And so using those connections, I think, are a positive as well. And how you use your mentors too to guide you probably. I want to talk about some key takeaways as well for women in security. And just, you guys have given a lot of great advice and guidance and also about your organizations and where things are going. But I'd love to, you know, hear a little more from each of you around some of the takeaways. And we've got some questions around values and, you know, obviously aligning your values to the organization you work for and the what you're doing. But maybe what we can do is go around and talk about some of the key takeaways that you want women in the audience to take away with you. We'll be doing this series pretty regularly. You know, the goal is to do it every quarter and feature women in sports and entertainment security so we can continue the conversation and continue to share with a wide audience and really showcase the amazing talent. So, you know, if you think about your takeaways and your values and how those help drive you, we'd love to, you know, just share your advice with the audience and, you know, I'll start with Eileen and then we'll go around the horn.
So I came to the security a bit later in life, so about 40 before I came into the event space, 39, something like that. And of course, I, you know, so a single mom with 5 children, had a lucky break, if you wish, but I saw an opportunity and I took it. And I suppose my key takeaway would continue to be curious. If there's something you want to know, reach out and ask. If you're not sure, knock the door of any other security professional. They will welcome you into their venue. They'll welcome you in. You know, I'm going to Australia in a few weeks and I've run already 3 venues in Australia to say, this is my job in the UK. I'd love to see how your cricket venue works, how your... And I've got 3 visits and I go, great, come over. And I think, wow, what best practice can I get over there? So nobody said, oh, you're a woman, you can't come. Yes, there is a perception that it's a man's world. There definitely is, but it's not. And I can tell you that any person feels the imposter syndrome, whether you're male or female. And as you said earlier, Cassie, you know, men will probably not worry about faking it, they will do it, but women have something innate that says, well, that's not really true and I can't really move forward with that. But the qualities that we have are just different and very similar and the same. So there are different things that we all bring to the party as individuals. So it doesn't mean to say that men aren't emotionally intelligent, but we have a place at the table and we've earned that right. And whether you've done it through your hard work and efforts, whether you've done it through being curious and continuing to learn and being at the top of your game, because that's what it takes. My leadership for 1,500 people means that they need to come in and feel valued at work. They need to come and feel that they're part of a team. They need to feel that they've been treated fairly. They need to understand that we will respect their decisions and support them in times of challenging behaviors that we're seeing within our event space. So as a leader, you've got to just step up there and go for it. And, you know, not everybody wants to be a leader. Again, absolutely perfectly fine. I've got lots of people who just want to do what they're doing. But if you don't know what's existing, but, you know, like you say, if you get a tour coming, I've got Beyonce coming for 5 nights. How much do I want to learn from their tour production team? A lot. And I'm going to grill them before they, when we go to tour and they disappear and I don't get the learning opportunity. So you just put yourself out there because people will share good information because you're learning and they can see that you want to, you know, get more information to do things differently, to do it better, to increase productivity. Whatever your game is, mine is, I didn't have many opportunities when I was younger. I had a baby at 17, had a lot of challenges around certain personal things. And I just feel very impassioned about, if I can do it with the challenges that I've overcome, then we all can do that. And I'll help anyone. I'll work with people. I'll mentor people. I do that regularly. To find people that they can just be the best versions of themselves at any given moment. So it's all out there to be had.
Amazing. And I want to say a quote because you said something about we have a seat at the table. And I think that's so true. But I think I told Muriel about this. I used this quote from Shirley Chisholm. She was the first African-American woman to run on a presidential ticket in the U.S. And she is from Brooklyn, New York. And she said, if there's no seat at the table, bring your own. And so I love that. That means so much because it's true. We're in control of where we go, what we're going to do, and taking control of that is really important, right? And saying what we want and go do it. And then, of course, having your values help drive you. So I know, Muriel, I think I shared that with you when we had talked, and I just love that quote.
You did. Yeah, you did. That resonated, and that did stick with me with what you said. That's awesome.
Yeah. So any takeaways, Muriel, from the conversation and that you want to share and, you know, maybe talk to you a little bit about the values that are driving you as well?
No, definitely. I think that confidence, you know, as a young lady stepping into the security industry, you know what you know. You know, working on the arena side was great. But when I actually stepped into the executive protection and I borrowed back on my military training, couldn't go too much, you know, because that is either, you know, certain things you can't discuss because you're either maiming or killing, and we don't want to go that far. But one of the things that I realized is I had to tap into the assets that I have. And yes, it was very intimidating to think, wow, as a female, can I really protect my male clients? But then I had to hone back in on my training, mm-hmm. my confidence in myself, to know that I can do this. I can be just as good. I can be just as effective. And I think sometimes as women, we may talk ourselves out of a situation because we're trying to equate ourselves to our male counterparts. When in opposition, I've actually had some of my male counterparts tell me that they think I'm too intimidating because of the way that I handle things. And that's not the way it's meant to be. I feel like sometimes I have to prove myself more, and it shouldn't be that way. I should be able to be who I am, and we should be able to lock arms and to do it together, mm-hmm. whether you're male or you're female. So yeah. I think we still have a little way to go to get there, but I think it's a lot better than where it was. We are a lot closer than when we started. Point to any young lady would be, know what you know. As Eileen said, continue to learn what you don't know so that you can better yourself, you know, be prepared for any situation that may arise, and being able to step into any situation with confidence, because it led me from one thing to the next. I can honestly tell you, when I started thinking about, okay, I've been in a male-dominated sports and entertainment world for a long time. And then when I stepped into the world of Miss America, I'm like, oh my goodness, I went from all men to women. What am I doing? How is this going to happen? But then I started thinking about it. My security base is my security base.
Yeah.
Male client or female client, it didn't matter. I just had to learn the nuances that go around in the pageantry world, which was phenomenal. But you know what? It just opened up my mind to learning even more things. So mm-hmm. what that has done is sharpened my toolbox. So I can, the takeaways that I learned from being in the pageantry world, or the competition world as it's called, has helped to just elevate the skills that I already have, regardless of who I'm working with, who I'm working for. I've just added one more tool to that toolbox to make me a better executive protection, a better security personnel. Whatever the title it is, I'm going to be the best at that craft. So those are the takeaways that I've had from my experiences.
Love that. I love that. I love the toolbox idea too. Like, think of your toolbox. Another, somebody said to me recently about creating your own board of advisors, right? Mm. And having a board of advisors that will, one, champion you, but two, tell you the truth when you need to hear it sometimes, right? And help guide you. So Adrian, I would love to hear your perspective on this and, you know, any, what are your takeaways and any values that drive you?
Yeah, I think number one has always been put in the work. No matter what you do, it's hard work. And so number two, drowning out the noise. We have to be kind to women because, one, there's, you know, society really doesn't talk about it, but there's a time in a woman's life where, is it career? Is it children? Can you have both? We're always being asked, well, you know, you're getting up there. Are you going to have kids? Are you going to, how are you going to do that with your job? Are you getting married? Are you not getting married? It's like, whoa, you know, we're all doing our best here. We got to cut, you know, we got to drown out the societal norms. We have to drown out the biases, and we just have to have faith in ourselves, believe in ourselves, put in the work, master the job. And then those decisions will come, and it's our business. It's no one else's. And so I'm just grateful that, you know, we live in a time where we even have these opportunities, because women at one point, they didn't have many, you know, job offers coming their way. And so, God, how lucky are we that we live in this time. And take risks. You know, at 35, I never could have imagined I would have left New Jersey, all my friends, all my family, and relocate 3,000 miles away for this huge opportunity, open a building, and everything was there. But, you know, I'm 35, so there's other things in my life I might want, going back to those societal norms. And the amount of internal pressure and stress you're feeling, and others don't know that. And so you just got to take a good look and say, what do you truly love? What do you want to do? And then just do it. And then those that love you will support you. Those that are on your side will support you. And that's all you need. And so I just think it's important, because females are always just getting such pressure. And, you know, I wish I put myself first always, you know, and I haven't always done that. And so once I started to do that as well, then more opportunities came. So definitely want to stress that.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. It's like when they say put the mask on in the plane before you put it on the kids, you know. I mean, that's the reality, is we got to take care of ourselves first. And those biases, I think, you know, the intent of today was to really try to blow up those biases, right? And that you have some very, very talented women here giving advice. And there's plenty more opportunity in the industry. And so ask for help, right? Create your board of advisors. Be genuine to who you are. Know what you want. And if you don't know what you want, then use your board of advisors to help you, right, in your network. And I think, you know, one of my pieces of advice I give to younger women is, you know, create a network. You know, I wish I would have done that a long time ago, because I probably would have had hundreds of thousands of followers on LinkedIn, right? But create your network and make sure it's a good network, strong network, and it's following and helping in your career. So I think that's just so important. And especially, I think, Eileen, you mentioned earlier about, you know, the technology usage, right? Much of the younger generation are starting to use newer technologies, and you can feel like, you know, let's say you're applying for a job in a security role, and maybe your resume, you know, isn't getting a response, and it's kind of getting into the system. And so how do you then go and use your network to help you with that and get through that technology barrier, I should say. So I have a couple. We are just about to the end, and we have some great questions. Ooh, this is a good one. So how do you think sports and entertainment security will evolve in the next 5 years? So anybody want to take that one?
I think it just goes back to, you know, I said this in the beginning, where, you know, we're advancing shows and there's female security directors. I have not seen that in 16 years. So our security leaders, you're just seeing more and more. So I think it's only going to continue to grow, and you're going to see more of females in that, on that executive level, which is very exciting.
That's fantastic.
From our perspective, I think what we'll see is security will change around cyber. And as more and more stadia become more technology savvy, again, I have the benefit of walking into a brand new stadium facility, which is completely technology driven. And, you know, one of our key internal teams is the cybersecurity team. So I think there's a new element around technology that's coming as well that needs to be looked at. Players, you know, if we're looking at that, how that's going to change for them, because say what we're seeing, this new trend of this hate crime online, keyboard warrior. So that's a new strand of, you know, security that I'm, you know, I've written down here, you know, continue to be curious. And at the moment I'm working with our cybersecurity team, I am not a tech person, and Chris and Lou will tell you I'm not a tech person because I can hardly get onto a Zoom call some days. But I'm really fascinated about the effect of technology into crowd management and learning more. So that's my new learning, just to be more confident about challenging things that the stadium are trying to put in without letting me know, and how that might affect crowd management and crowd dynamics when we're dealing with some incident management stuff. So I think cybersecurity is something that everybody should have on their radar and get themselves working to understand how it works and how many hacks are potentially coming out, where they come from. You know, I know what ransomware and malware is now. Look at me. and I also know how many, you know, the percentage of how often we might get attacked. And as all of that's been developed and delivered by another colleague of mine, but to sit in my control room on a match day knowing that we are protected from those things, I can with confidence then go forward. So so I think safety and security will look at more technology. Certainly things like, I was at an innovation lab a few weeks ago, and they were looking at a robo dog that can actually go in and do some search and will detect explosives and so forth. So maybe there's some of those types of technology. You know, I'm the girl who watched Star Trek and thought, oh my goodness, they've got this flip phone and they can video call people. That's amazing. And here we are. Fast forward a few years on, a few. And there we are already. Look at us on a Zoom call. So what's coming next for us? Keep an open mind and embrace it, because that's the future, I think. So the unknown. And again, the 2030, going back to that, we were talking to some colleagues around, what jobs do you think our young people are going to be doing that we haven't even thought we need them to do? Yeah. You know, so there's a whole world that we just don't even know yet, because technology is driving us so quickly.
It's a great, great viewpoint around cybersecurity too, because I think cyber and physical, you know, really go hand in hand. And I think the growing nature of how you're using cyber protections and risk mitigation, but also proactive AI. So looking at threats that are coming at you either before the venue, during and after, and using those to make decisions. But then also I love, you know, I think absolutely you're right. The technology landscape is going to evolve pretty rapidly over the next 5 years. And then to Adrian's point, I think the advancement, seeing how many women are in security and sports and entertainment, and that advancement path, and just pushing on it, right? You know, we shouldn't give up. We've got to push. I mean, we make 51% of the world's population, like you said. So Muriel, do you have any viewpoint on how security will change over the next 5 years from your perspective?
You know, I think through conversation and education, with all of the advancements that both Eileen and Adrian have just mentioned, and even you mentioned, I think the transformation will happen naturally, and then we're going to wind up adapting to it. Because of the fact, you know, we've seen how it's changed already, and we can't stop it. We just have to manage through it so that it's a win-win in our environment. So, I just think that it's something that's going to happen, and we just got to stay on top of it. But communicate, educate, teach about the artificial intelligence, you know, make our clients aware of how it works. Because oftentimes people don't know how it works. They hear the topic, but they don't have the true understanding.
Right.
So I think the whole process of educating everybody on how this actually affects our industry will be key over the next 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's elements of artificial intelligence, privacy, how that links in with the fan experience will be an important conversations over the next few years. And I think women will have a front row seat, if not, you know, the stage for that. Obviously, if we continue to push on the advancements, I think women will play a major role in that. Because, you know, we talk about AI and the need for different perspectives in creating AI, right? And that's really important. I think that will advance even more over the next several years. And taking into account, like, what good can AI do? And then those privacy controls, because fans, obviously, they want to go to events, but they also want to know that there's some level of privacy with them going to that event or whatever it may be, right? And so I think that'll be important. We are down to the wire here. I want to, I know it's later for Eileen. I want to thank all of our panelists. You guys are amazing and just so inspiring. And I hope the audience has taken a lot of great information from this session. And again, we'll be doing another one. But I do want to, you know, hopefully the sports and entertainment industry will take notice of this and, you know, continue to create ways for women to advance in sports. And then, of course, following in the footsteps of all of you and really helping women break through, blow up the bias that exists. And together, I think we can do that. So really appreciate you spending the time today. And I see Dr. Lou's back. So he's here to, you know, our MC is here to wrap it up, huh?
I was listening intently, and I just want to say to all of you the great insight for our profession, and it was just a wonderful town hall. And Cassia, thank you for organizing, putting it together. Adrian, Eileen, and Muriel, very good day for us. And the attendees, thank you for being a participant. Very well received in the nation and all over the world. And thank you so much. To all of you, we'll see you next month at our next town hall on policing. And then in the future, we are going to get with Cassia and obviously do a few of these a year, which would be great for our profession.
Yeah, so, and we were going to have Buffy Payne was going to be here. We had technical difficulties, so she'll be in the next one. So
next one, that's right.
Yep.
All so right, well, again, thank you. Thank you, and thank you so much. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.